Welcome to the Blindness and Disability News Hour from Mind's Eye Radio. This program covers the week of October 27th, 2024. And we are this week also presenting an encore broadcast of a program that was originally broadcast on October 24th, 2021. So grab a cup of coffee, grab a blanket, and enjoy. We are going to start our program this week with something from Schott's Health News from NPR. You can find them at National Public Radio, npr.org. And this is written by Selena Simmons Duffin, and it was posted online on October 21st. New federal funds spur expansion of home health care services for the elderly and disabled. For older people and people with disabilities, solving everyday practical problems can be the difference between being able to live at home and being forced to make a move to an institution. Sometimes people need help getting dressed or making meals, and sometimes they need help managing medications or shopping for groceries. Originally, these things were not paid for by Medicaid, the federal health care program that many low-income and disabled Americans rely on. In recent years, the program has worked to expand coverage of home-based care, but it's still optional for states. Some states have adopted it widely, while in others, more care still happens in nursing homes and other institutions. In April, the Biden administration rolled out funding for the American Rescue Plan to help states boost these services. And Thursday, the Federal Department of Health and Human Services unveiled every state's plan for how they'll use the funds. An estimated $12.7 billion in federal matching funds are available to, quote, encourage states to expand home and community-based services and strengthen their programs, unquote, according to an agency press release. Quote, more and more people are saying, if I need care, I'd like it to be done at home or here in my community versus an institution or a hospital or a nursing home, says Health Secretary Xavier Becerra. In the 21st century, we're moving closer to a care model that's based on giving people services in their home. Becerra adds that his own father spent his last few months in hospice at home. When he passed, he was in my home. He was surrounded by family, unquote, he says. Medicaid recently surpassed 80 million beneficiaries, the most ever since the program was created in the 1960s. It is the primary provider of long-term care services for older people, since these are not covered by Medicare or private insurance. The move towards home and community-based care has been gradual since Medicaid started, says Mary Beth Musumeci, an associate director at the Kaiser Family Foundation's program on Medicaid and the uninsured. Quote, this is really the first new funding that we're seeing for home and community-based services, really, since the Affordable Care Act in 2010, she says. Back in 1965, the world was different. Societal expectations were different, she explains. For example, if you had a child born with a significant disability, it was much more likely that you might institutionalize that child from a very young age. Medical science and technology has also not advanced to the point where it is now, unquote. These days, it's both possible and preferable for everyday help to be provided to people at home, she says. There are a lot of reasons why the shift toward home-based care is a good thing, says Jack Rollins, Director of Federal Policy at the National Association of Medicaid Directors. For someone who needs these services, quote, you can get care from your family or from people that you trust in the community who can come into your home, he says. It generally costs less than providing these services in the nursing home. Folks that receive these services are generally happier with them. They prefer it, unquote. He adds that regardless of where states are now in terms of offering these services, this new funding will help move them further along. For instance, he says, one of the things that generally Medicaid can't directly pay for is internet connectivity. With these dollars, it looks like we can, unquote. That means people could get consistent broadband internet access, he explains, which could allow them to use telehealth services. There's a time limit to this funding boost, though. The money provided by the American Rescue Plan will shore up these services, quote, is a meaningful amount, but the challenging part is that it's limited to 12 months, unquote, explains Musumeci. Many Medicaid advocates are hoping that a more permanent support for these services will come through the budget bill getting hashed out in Congress. Quote, we do remain hopeful that the investment gets through in some form or fashion, says Rollins. We think it's important. The health secretary says he thinks so, too. Quote, we're hoping that Congress will continue to provide additional resources so we can make these increased services at home and community-based settings permanent, Becerra says. Through the COVID-19 pandemic, he adds, Medicaid has proved its value, unquote. Our next story here on the Blindness and Disability News Hour comes from blindnewworld.org and the hashtag MyBlindStory blog site. Are education options truly accessible for all? And this was posted on October 20th, 2021, as written by Palitha Bandera. You must be familiar with the term education for all. This has been used as a slogan by the rulers of various countries in the world to demonstrate their enthusiasm and dedication for educational development. In reality, though, it is a camouflage in some parts of the developing world. Here, I believe it is relevant to share my experiences with the readers that blind people in Sri Lanka are being confronted and limited in their educational pursuits. It is a heartbreaking situation. For instance, some blind students complete 13 years of school education amidst various hardships, with a firm determination of pursuing higher education. Finally, they get the opportunity to sit for the GCE advanced level examination with their able counterparts. However, the blind are not permitted to select the subjects of their choice or preference. Instead, their subject selection is confined to the authorities to arts subjects. Consequently, even if the blind students are selected to a university, they are compelled to be satisfied with whatever subjects are available in the arts faculties. No one needs in-depth knowledge on social injustice, human rights, or international conventions to comprehend this disparity to another group of human beings in the same society. Surprisingly, the policymakers or policy implementation groups have not realized this as a great injustice to the blind community in Sri Lanka. However, it is not difficult for any reasonable person to realize that the above-mentioned disparities in Sri Lanka would undoubtedly contradict the validity of the United Nations declaration that, quote, education is an inviolable right of every person born in this world, unquote. From the perspective of a sighted person, the options are open and endless. Not once would they have to consider giving up their preference and desired field of study once they have earned their way into the doors of a university. But this is what is happening every day to people who are blind, and until this is seen and fully acknowledged, it will never change. How would you feel if you had worked tirelessly for years, fully committed to overcoming every obstacle that came your way to reach university, only to be denied your dream major once you arrived there? This is an injustice of great proportions. Especially when, in today's technological world, there are so many new innovations being developed to create and access information. So why can't there be a pathway carved out for the blind? Until the system is changed from within and this type of discrimination is eradicated, the saying, education for all, will remain nothing but a catchy slogan, lacking in any real substance or truth. And Palitha Bandera lives in Colombo, Sri Lanka. He has a Bachelor of Arts with honors in Buddhist civilization from the University of Sri Jayawardenepura. He currently works as an audiobook editor with the goal of increasing educational resources for blind students in Sri Lanka. He also contributes to the Power of Heart Facebook page, which aims to bridge the gap between the sighted and blind communities. And we continue with this week's edition of the Blindness and Disability News Hour with a visit to NLS Music Notes, as we usually do this time every week. This is a service of the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled, which comes from the Library of Congress. And you can find them online at blogs.loc.gov. This week's post was written by Brian McCurdy in the series American Music from A to Z in the NLS Music Collection. This week's post is brought to you by the letter E, and we'll be talking about the Eastman School of Music. In our alphabetical journey through the NLS Music Collection, we have arrived this month at the letter E. It just so happens that 2021 is the centennial of the founding of one of the world's leading music schools, the Eastman School of Music in Rochester, New York. Composers, educators, performers, and other music pioneers from this prestigious institution are represented far and wide throughout our holdings. Composers such as Howard Hanson, Peter Menon, and Charles Strauss, who wrote Bye Bye Birdie and Annie, jazz musicians Ron Carter and Chuck Mangione, conductor Frederick Fennell, performers such as Alan Vizzuti and educators Kent Kennan and H. Owen Reed populate our collection. The story of the Eastman School of Music begins with the vision of its founder, George Eastman, who lived from 1854 to 1932. George Eastman was born in 1854 in Waterville, New York. That same year, his father, George Washington Eastman, established Eastman's Commercial College in Rochester. The family moved to Rochester in 1860, but 2 years later, the elder Eastman died suddenly, leaving his family with few financial resources. George Eastman left school at age 14 to support his mother, Maria Kilborn Eastman, and two older sisters, Ellen, who were named Ellen and Kate. He first worked at a local insurance company and then as a junior clerk at the Rochester Savings Bank. At age 23, George Eastman began experimenting with photography, seeking to improve the technology of equipment that was bulky, heavy, and expensive at the time. He founded the Eastman Dry Plate Company in 1884 and later renamed it the Eastman Kodak Company in 1892. During his life, Eastman donated over $100 million to charitable organizations, educational and art institutions, and public entities such as hospitals and parks. In his will, he left funds that would encourage expansion of medical facilities and appreciation of the arts in Rochester. He established the Eastman School of Music in 1921 as the first professional school of the University of Rochester. The original vision of the school, dedicated to the highest levels of artistry and scholarship, is still alive and vital through the Eastman School's numerous creative endeavors. Today, students can hear and perform the full spectrum of music, from opera to jazz, from medieval music to new works composed by their fellow students. The legacy of musical leadership at Eastman is astounding. Since 1921, the Eastman School of Music has had only 7 directors. Composer Howard Hanson served as director of Eastman School from 1924 to 1964. Under his leadership, the school developed into an institution in which students could receive a well-rounded education while concentrating upon their professional studies. The world-renowned Eastman Wind Ensemble, founded in 1952 by Frederick Fennell, has had only 4 conductors in its history: Mark Scatterday, Donald Hunsberger, A. Clyde Roller, and Fennell. The Sibley Music Library, founded in 1904 and later absorbed by the Eastman School in 1922, had 3 directors from 1922 to 1999: Barbara Duncan from 1922 to 1947, Ruth T. Watanabe from 1947 to 1984, and Mary Wallace Davidson from 1984 to 1999. The Sibley Library is the largest music library affiliated with any college or university in the United States. A true American institution, the Eastman School of Music has helped shape the musical culture of the United States for 100 years. The Festivals of American Music, a project started by George Eastman in 1930, lasting until 1971, saw more than 200 compositions receive their first performance, with the composers being present for the rehearsals and the public concerts. It is through this and other programs that the Eastman School of Music has become a flagship musical institution in the United States. As George Eastman stated in 1921, quote, "The life of our communities in the future needs what our schools of music and other fine arts can give them. It is necessary for people to have an interest in life outside their occupations," unquote. And if you've enjoyed learning about the Eastman School of Music, then please peruse these titles from the NLS collection that relate to this post. You can download most of these selections from Bard, or borrow hard copies in Braille or on cartridge by calling us at 800-424-8567, extension 2. That's 800-424-8567, extension 2. Or through email at nlsm@loc.gov. That's nlsm@loc.gov. And so let's start with audio selections. First from Nathan Osang, Better Mousetraps, Product Improvements That Led to Success. And this book focuses on, quote, improvers, refiners, and polishers, unquote, instead of first inventors. It includes people such as George Eastman, who made a better camera, King C. Gillette, who improved the razor, Frank J. Zamboni, who made better ice resurfacers, and companies such as Pepperidge Farm and its better bread, and Otis, with its improved elevators. This is for grades 4 through 7, and the call sign is DB33257. Next, from Larry Applebaum, Jazz Conversation, Ron Carter and Larry Applebaum. The Library's Larry Applebaum talks with legendary jazz bassist and Eastman graduate Ron Carter. Carter is a Grammy-winning performer, composer, and educator, a master musician at the top of his form. His astonishing roster of more than 2,000 recordings with collaborators that include Lena Horne, B.B. King, and Miles Davis is a thread that runs through jazz history, connecting blues, swing, bebop, hip-hop, and funk. You can find this at call sign DBM04268. Next, from Dominic Argento, Voyage of Edgar Allan Poe. Selections from the opera Voyage of Edgar Allan Poe, with commentary by Alfred Glaser and Frank Galati. Argento earned his Ph.D. from the Eastman School of Music. You can find this at DBM01604. And next, the Chamber Orchestra. Frederick Fennell conducts the Eastman School of Music's Chamber Orchestra in performances of Alessandro Scarlatti's Concerto Grosso in F minor and Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's Symphony in number 29 in A major. A brief introduction to these composers and works is given. DBM00218. Next is Haydn and Handel, Masterpieces in Chamber Music. Eastman School of Music students performing Michael Haydn's Quintet for Strings in C major and Handel's Passacaglia, arranged for violin and viola by Johann Halvorsen at DBM00302. Next, from Barbara Mitchell, Click, The Story About George Eastman, The Life Story of George Eastman, Who Made a Camera Simple for Everyone to Use, for grades 3 through 6 at DB25485. And finally, from Charles Strauss, By Strauss. Charles Strauss, who composed the score of Bye Bye Birdie, discusses the importance of a composer's involvement in arranging and orchestrating melodies. At the age of 15, he entered the Eastman School of Music at the University of Rochester. After graduating in 1947, he won 2 scholarships to Tanglewood, where he studied under Aaron Copland. You can find this at DBM00560. And next we have a selection of Braille materials, also available from the NLS music section. First, from Dominic Argento, Miss Halversham's Wedding Night. The soprano part from Miss Havisham's Wedding Night, an opera based on Great Expectations by Charles Dickens. Argento studied with Alan Hovhaness and Howard Hanson at Eastman and would later serve on the faculty there, and it's in line-by-line format at BRM 36015. Next, from Nathaniel Dett, or R. Nathaniel Dett, Juba, a dance in the suite, or from the suite In the Bottoms. And Robert Nathaniel Dett, who lived from 1882 to 1943, often known as R. Nathaniel Dett and Nathaniel Dett, was a Canadian-American black composer, organist, pianist, choral director, and music professor. Even after being awarded honorary doctorates in music from Howard University in 1924 and Oberlin in 1926, he chose to enroll in the graduate program at the Eastman School of Music in 1931. And this is for piano in bar over bar format at BRM 27832. And also from R. Nathaniel Dett, Listen to the Lambs, for SATB and piano in line-by-line and bar-over-bar formats at BRM 04462, and also Rise Up, Shepherd, and Follow for TTBB chorus in paragraph format at BRM 04013. And a number of items from Kent Kennan. First, counterpoint based on 18th century practice. Kennan studied at Eastman with Howard Hannon in the 1930s. It's in contracted Braille, and it's also available in large print at LPM 00198. The contracted Braille version is at BRM 22142. Next is the Sonata for Trumpet and Piano in line-by-line and section-by-section formats at BRM 17014, pardon me. Next, the Technique of Orchestration, contracted Braille and bar-over-bar formats, also available in large print at LPM 00287. The Braille version is found at BRM 12911. The Technique of Orchestration, Musical Examples. Musical examples from chapters 9 to 16 of Kent Kennan's The Technique of Orchestration, in line-by-line and bar-over-bar formats at BRM 36649. And next from Alan Irvine McHose, The Contrapuntal Harmonic Technique of the 18th Century, from the Eastman School of Music series at BRM 20686. And also from Alan Irvine McHose, Sight Singing Manual from the Eastman School of Music series at BRM 20899. And a couple from Peter Menon, Bought Locks, SSA with Piano. Menon studied orchestration with Howard Hanson at Eastman and earned his bachelor's and master's degrees in 1945 in line-by-line and bar-over-bar formats at BRM 22057, and also five piano pieces in bar-over-bar format at BRM 22019. From Ron Nelson, The Christmas Story for Unaccompanied Chorus and Narrator for, let's see, Volume 2 for One Soprano 1, Volume 2 for Soprano 2, Volume 3 for Alto, Volume 4 Tenor, Volume 5 for Tenor 2, Volume 6 for Bass 1, and Volume 7 for Bass 2, and finally Volume 8 for the Narrator. Nelson received three academic degrees from Eastman, culminating with a Doctor of Musical Arts degree in 1957. This is at BRM 04768. From Sergei Rachmaninoff, Concerto No. 2 in C minor, Opus 18. This transcription includes the first piano part of the two piano version. It's transcribed by Lawrence R. Smith, graduate of the Eastman School of Music, and it's in bar-over-bar format at BRM 36508. From H. Owen Reed, A Workbook in the Fundamentals of Music. These timeless tools provide teachers with a systematic approach for presenting the fundamentals of music theory for both private and classroom instruction. Reed received his Ph.D. from Eastman and would serve on the faculty at Michigan State University for 37 years. This is at BRM23634. From Anton Rubinstein, Melody in F for Piano. One of the most popular piano pieces by Anton Rubinstein in bar-over-bar format. It's transcribed by Lawrence R. Smith, a graduate of Eastman School of Music. At BRM36572. And from Alan Vizzuti, Dynamic Dances, Graded Concerto Studies for Flute, Unaccompanied Solo Flute Pieces for Advanced Students. Vizzuti is a trumpet virtuoso. He graduated from Eastman in 1976 and has performed on the original motion picture soundtrack recordings to Back to the Future and many of the Star Trek movies. And this is in single-line format at BRM36635. And finally, the Alan Vizzuti Trumpet Method, Book 1, Technical Studies, Book 2, Harmonic Studies, Book 3, Melodic Studies, in single-line and section-by-section formats. Book 1 is at BRM35717. Book 2 is at BRM33012, and Book 3 is at BRM33023. And we continue this week's edition of the Blindness and Disability News Hour with a few quick little tech notes from coolblindtech.com. All of these came out, within the last week or so, this first one on October 18th. YouTube is coming out with new accessibility features. YouTube is improving video accessibility for both viewers with vision loss and other languages. The company is testing the option of adding multiple audio tracks to videos. This will help with international viewers, of course, but it should also enable descriptive audio for people with some vision to no vision. This arrives sometime in the, quote, coming quarters, unquote, YouTube said. Automatic captions should also be far more commonplace. YouTube now permits live automatic captions for any live stream in English, not just those with 1,000 or more subscribers. These live captions will be available for all 13 supported audio captioning languages in, quote, the coming months, unquote, according to the company. Auto-translated captions will also reach supported languages on Android and iOS later in 2021. So you won't have to turn on your PC to make sense of a video you don't understand. YouTube is also testing with a small group of creators the ability to add multiple audio tracks on their videos, which will help provide multi-language audio for international audiences, as well as descriptive audio for people who are blind or low vision. The company is planning to roll this feature out more widely in the coming quarters. An experiment later in 2021 will let you search transcripts on your phone, YouTube added. A previously promised subtitle editor is still on track to launch in the, quote, coming months, unquote, giving creators the chance to delegate subtitle creation to someone they trust. The upgrades make sense. YouTube is increasingly dependent on a global audience for views, particularly with the growth of live streaming. These tweaks ensure more people can watch, even if a creator doesn't have the resources to add subtitles themselves. And in this post from October 25th, the GPS app guides visually impaired navigation trails of a city park. An app that helps blind and visually impaired people navigate their surroundings is now available for some trails in Fish Creek Park in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. People with vision loss can now explore Fish Creek Park independently, thanks to the Blind Square app. It's part of a pilot project by Alberta Parks with CNIB Frontier Accessibility and TransCanada Trail to make hiking more accessible to people of all abilities. So, what is Blind Square? Blind Square is a 3D audible GPS app that feeds information to the user about their surroundings. It uses auditory cues to guide people along a route and alert them to things like trail surface changes, crossings, bridges, benches, buildings, and trail features. Blind Square is an international accessibility app that is fairly new to Alberta, but is expanding here. The app can be used in places that are mapped out through the use of beacons, GPS, or even QR codes. So, how does it work on the trails? The user points the phone, shakes it, and waits for the information about what's up ahead. And that includes the new trail accessibility initiative in Fish Creek Provincial Park. The province says park visitors can now use the app to help them navigate Stream Changes Trail and the visitor center. Blind Square can also allow people to mark out a destination, such as a restaurant, and then guide to them on foot. Are there any other parks that work with the app? Well, the province launched a similar trail initiative in Lois Hole Provincial Park in May and is looking at a third in Peter Lougheed Provincial Park this winter. And finally, in another post from October 25th, Apple Music comes out with a new voice-only plan. Apple unveiled a new voice plan for Apple Music during its Unleashed event last Monday that will be $4.99 a month. You can use only your voice and its Siri voice assistant to access all Apple Music content across Apple devices, and it will be available later this fall in 17 countries. Quote, Apple Music and Siri are natural partners and already work seamlessly together, unquote, Oliver Schusser, Apple's vice president of Apple Music and Beats, said in a press release. And non-subscribers can sign up for a free 7-day trial without auto-renewal to check out voice before they commit. Users can subscribe to the plan with Siri by saying, Hey Siri, start my Apple Music voice trial, or by signing up through the Apple Music app. Once subscribed, users can request music to be played across all of their Siri-enabled devices, including HomePod Mini, AirPods, iPhone, and when using CarPlay. VoicePlan subscribers will have access to hundreds of new stations and playlists and full playback controls, including unlimited song skipping. VoicePlan subscribers will get customized in-app experiences with suggestions based on their preferences and recently played music. There will be a dedicated section called Just Ask Siri with tips on how to optimize Siri for Apple Music. And if you have just joined us, you're listening to the Blindness and Disability News Hour from Mind's Eye Radio in Belleville, Illinois. This program covers the week of October 24th, 2021. Thanks again for joining us, and now let's get back to the program. Our next story comes from the Voice of the Nation's Blind, a blog site operated by the National Federation of the Blind, and you can find them online at nfb.org. And this post is titled, The Magic of a Month, and Should We Be Celebrating? And this is posted on October 25th and is written by Gary Wunder. For the last few weeks, we have been writing about Blind Equality Achievement Month, focusing a bit of attention on each letter that encompasses our approach to October and the effort that we make to change people's perceptions about what it means to be blind. We save the toughest question for last. Why a month? Have we achieved enough to celebrate? And why should the blind get special attention? So, what is a month? Well, Merriam-Webster says it is, quote, a measure of time corresponding nearly to the period of the moon's revolution and amounting to approximately 4 weeks or 30 days or 1/12 of a year, unquote. So, as much as I respect and rely on Merriam-Webster, that really doesn't get us very far because it tells us what we already know. I could play a little bit with the romantic notions about the various stages of the moon, but I'm not sure that would tell us anything about why a month is an appropriate measure of how long we should celebrate the achievements of the blind or focus our energy on receiving equal treatment. Maybe we can start by admitting that a month is an arbitrary period, where we are talking about how long a celebration should be. Perhaps what we should be discussing is not why a month is the obvious choice for our program, but instead figure out how to take best advantage of this measure of time. If we want to send a message to people, we must realize that they are busy and offer it at times when they may be able to receive it. A month lets us choose from all the weekdays that end in Y, and we may take the same advantage of weekends to catch those who are otherwise occupied during the week. A month is long enough to let us schedule multiple activities and not wear people out by trying to squeeze those activities into a week. Some people are concerned less about the unit of time, but instead focused on the appropriateness of celebrating achievements by blind people. They ask why we should be celebrating when there is so much work still to do. The acknowledgement of achievement suggests that work pays off, and this is important if, in fact, we have more work to do, which we most assuredly do. We need some time to do cheerleading to get people excited about what blind people have done, but, more importantly, about what blind people can do. For some, this excitement may translate into extending opportunities to people they had previously considered incapable. For others, it may mean taking a step that they previously thought foolish, unrealistic, or imprudent. Encouraging a person to dream is a positive step, but helping them to act on that dream is truly a noble leap forward. One question that is periodically raised is why blind people should highlight their own achievements, given there is already Disability Awareness Month. If we are engaging in needless duplication, it is a poor use of our resources and time. A compelling argument for me has always been that blindness is feared more than any other disability, and polls have suggested that it is feared second only to cancer when it comes to health conditions. A significant reduction in eyesight is specific in the life changes it can bring about, and answering those fears must be equally specific. Generic terms are fine when crafting legislation to broadly address human rights or trying to define large groups of people. But when it comes to problem solving, people are looking for specific solutions, and being responsive must mean that we are specific in discussing our life experiences and the alternative techniques we daily employ. Is there a reason to focus energy and attention on the quest for equality and the achievements that have sprung from it during the month of October? The answer isn't found in some book of wisdom. It is found in us. If we believe that the pursuit of equality and opportunity is worth it, we share that passion with the public. If we believe that our achievements are worth sharing with the world that too often undervalues us, we will do it. If our life experience is that, quote, we should do that sometime, unquote, is less effective than, quote, let's do it next week, unquote, then we will rally behind the idea of Blind Equality Achievement Month and focus on making who we are, what we do, and what we can bring to our communities more visibly in the 31 days October gifts to us. I think we should, we can, and fervently believe that we will. And as we continue with this week's edition of the Blindness and Disability News Hour, we're going to talk some more tech, but this time in a little bit more depth. From the current edition of Access World Magazine from the American Foundation for the Blind. You'll find them online at afb.org. And let's hear about Video Streaming Services Part 6, Amazon Prime Video, an enormous range of content. This is written by Judy Dixon. Amazon Prime Video was one of the earliest commercial video streaming services, and today is one of the largest, with a lot to offer a blind and visually impaired audience. The service began as Amazon Unbox in September 2006. The current iteration of Prime Video was launched in December of 2016 and now has more than 125 million members. Amazon Prime members have access to thousands of movies and TV series as part of their membership fee, while other content is available for purchase or rent. The selection of included with Prime titles changes regularly, and other titles can be played free with ads or rented, purchased without ads. If you are not an Amazon Prime member, you can sign up for Prime Video at $8.99 a month. New members can get a 30-day free trial, and college students can get a 6-month free trial. As of August of 2021, Amazon Prime Video offered more than 24,000 movies and 2,100 TV series. The content on Amazon Prime Video continues to grow by leaps and bounds. In May of 2021, Amazon acquired MGM, and in July of 2021, it was announced that films from Universal Pictures would be brought to Prime Video. However, content from both of these companies is already available on competing streaming services, so it is unclear exactly when this content will be brought to Prime Video as a result of these acquisitions. One feature that distinguishes Prime Video from similar streaming services is live sports events. These include NFL football, NBA basketball, and PGA golf. In March of 2021, the National Football League announced a 10-year deal that gives Prime Video the exclusive rights to air its Thursday night football games starting in 2022. Prime Video has already aired NFL games for at least two seasons, but they were simulcasts rather than exclusives. Signing up for Prime Video. The process of signing up for Prime Video varies somewhat from platform to platform. On an iPhone, you first download the Prime Video app from the App Store. Then you launch the app and sign into Amazon with your email address or phone number and your password and create an account if you don't have one. Next, if you are a Prime member, you can then accept or decline notifications and you will be on the main screen of the app. If you're not a Prime member, you will be prompted to subscribe to the service. On an Apple TV, first download and launch the Prime Video app. Select Get Started. Next, you will be instructed to open a web browser on a computer or mobile device and go to www.amazon.com/mytp, and you will be given a code to enter when you get there. Next, you log into your Amazon account or create an account if you don't have one and enter the provided code. At any time, you can press the up arrow on the Apple TV remote to have VoiceOver repeat the code. The code is valid for 10 minutes. And finally, alternatively, you can scan a QR code that is displayed in the corner of the screen. Other mobile devices, streaming media players, and smart TVs use similar methods. Supported platforms. Amazon Prime Video can be accessed on a variety of platforms, including web browsers, smart TVs from Sony, LG, Samsung, Sharp, JVC, Panasonic, and others, cable services, mobile devices, including iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, and Android devices, Apple TV, Amazon devices such as the Fire TV, Fire TV Stick, Echo devices with a screen such as Echo Show and Echo Spot, the Fire tablet, also on Roku and Chromecast. Not all devices have the same features, though. To use Prime Video on a computer running Windows, Mac OS, Chrome OS, or Linux, open a supported web browser, go to www.primevideo.com, and log into your Amazon account. Supported web browsers are Google Chrome, Mozilla Firefox, Microsoft Internet Explorer, Microsoft Edge, Safari, and Opera. From the browser, you can purchase and play content, access live streams, and access closed captions and audio descriptions. The device supports several advanced video and audio formats. Dolby Atmos is available on some titles, but that number is still quite small. The description page for a title will let you know in which formats the title is offered. Getting help with Prime Video. Prime Video has a very extensive help page. Here you can learn about installing Prime Video on your devices, get technical support with any playback issues, including live streaming, and cancel subscriptions you no longer want or request a refund for something you purchased by mistake. If you choose Contact Us, you will be taken to a page with a live chat option. If you want to talk with a human, select the We Can Call You link, choose the reason you want to talk with someone, and if the subject is something they can help you with, you will be prompted for a phone number. Many of the topics yield additional help articles. Amazon Channels. Similar to Apple TV Plus, Prime Video also offers over 100 channels. This is the Amazon Prime add-on that lets you choose to access other services from within the Prime Video app. Amazon Prime members can add channels such as Showtime, Stars, and Hallmark Movies Now without a cable provider. The cost for most channels is similar to their cost elsewhere. Subscription providers manage the availability of titles that are included with their service. Some channel subscriptions also feature Watch Live. This feature gives you the option to live stream programming on supported devices at the same time that it's broadcast on TV. Watch Party. Viewers can use a feature launched in 2020 called Watch Party to enjoy movies and other content virtually with friends and family. There can be up to 100 people in a watch party, but each person must have a U.S.-based Prime Video subscription. All of the movies and TV shows are available through this feature. If the content requires rent or purchase, each member of the watch party must purchase the item. To get started, use a Fire TV or supported web browser on a computer, locate the title you want to watch with others, choose Watch Party, enter the name you want to use when chatting with others, and then choose Create Watch Party. There are several social media options, or you can copy link for sending via email or text message. By selecting that link, your friends and family can join your watch party. The host can play, pause, and control the video, and hosts have a chat feature to talk with all other members of the group. The content can only be viewed on a computer TV or Fire TV device, but members can simultaneously chat from a mobile device. Audio description. In June of 2017, Amazon's Prime Video began supporting audio description. They began with more than 133 movies from studios such as Disney, Lionsgate, NBC, Paramount, and Warner Brothers. They continue to add titles, and now thousands are available with English audio description, including such titles as The Hunger Games, Inception, Captain America, Civil War, and the Big Short. All Amazon original titles in the U.S. also have audio description. These include many popular TV series such as The Man in the High Castle, The Boys, and The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Amazon Prime maintains its own list of titles with audio description at Amazon.com, movies and TV shows with audio descriptions, movies and TV. And the American Council of the Blind's Audio Description Project maintains lists of all known titles with audio description, including those on Prime Video. Amazon Prime Video is now producing much of its described content with synthetic speech. This practice is somewhat controversial among blind users. Though Amazon is not the only provider to offer content with text-to-speech descriptions, it is by far the largest producer. Prime Video's goal is to use text-to-speech technology to simplify the process of creating audio descriptions to where they become industry standard for all content, just like closed captions. Much of its content is produced using the Joanna voice, a high-quality adult female voice. Joanna is one of six adult English voices available through Amazon Polly, their cloud service that offers text-to-speech technology in many languages. Two types of text-to-speech are typically used for audio description, concatenative and neural. Concatenative text-to-speech simply assembles words from stored sounds. It is the kind of text-to-speech that is most familiar to screen reader users. Neural text-to-speech is based on machine learning methods that aim to recreate human learning processes. Rather than having to piece together strings of speech fragments that represent a particular expression or emotion, the artificial intelligence behind neural text-to-speech methods learns through repetition how to adjust tone, volume, and other nuanced dimensions of language to recreate natural-sounding speech. Prime Video uses both of these. Examples of audio description provided with concatenative text-to-speech are the TV series Mad Men and the movies Rear Window and Our Town. Examples of neural text-to-speech are the TV series Psych and the movie Strategic Air Command. They aim to choose the voice that best fits with the content they are describing. This means choosing a voice that is distinct from the voices of the actors and actresses in the content, so viewers can easily distinguish the audio descriptions. Amazon has developed a software package that allows a describer to write descriptive text that will fit in the available pauses, and the voice is automatically generated to fill that space. This software allows Amazon to describe thousands of programs, many of which are older titles. As this technology evolves, they have an option to easily change and re-record scripts with new narrators using either neural or concatenative text-to-speech. Prime Video on the iPhone and iPad. The Prime Video app on the iPhone and iPad is similar to the apps of other streaming services. On some platforms, such as Apple TV, the Prime Video app is self-voicing, but on the iPhone and iPad, it is not. There are five tabs at the bottom of the main screen. Home, with Continue Watching, Movies, and TV Shows We Think You'll Like, and lots of featured categories. Store, with similar sections for movies and TV shows available for rent or purchase. Find, with a search box where you can search by actor, title, or genre as well as lots of categories to browse. Downloads, where all your previous downloads are listed. And My Stuff, which includes your profile, settings, and your watch list. It can be very convenient to download content on your mobile device for watching on the go without using your data plan. The method of activating audio description is also similar. To turn it on, do the following. First, while content is playing, double-tap for video controls. Next, flick to audio and subtitle options and double-tap. You may have to flick through quite a few names of stars in the show. Third, the list of subtitle languages is on the left and the list of audio languages on the right. Double-tap English audio description to select it. And finally, on the iPhone, double-tap the close button in the upper right corner. On the iPad, double-tap the Dismiss pop-up outside the list area. Prime Video on an Android phone. Turning on audio description for playback in the Prime Video app is a bit different. First, while content is playing, a two-finger swipe-up brings up the playback menu. Next, flick on the Subtitles and Closed Captions Available button. Even though this button doesn't say anything about the audio, this is where you find the control to turn on audio description. Third, the subtitles list is on the left, and the audio list is on the right. Select the language you want with audio description. And finally, double-tap the close button in the bottom right corner. Next, Prime Video on the Apple TV. On the Apple TV, the Prime Video app is self-voicing, so don't be surprised if the speaking voice changes completely when you launch it. This app also opens with a Who's Watching screen, which lets you choose the preferred viewer profile for this session. To enable audio description in the Prime Video app on the Apple TV, do the following. First, while the content is playing, flick down on the remote control. Second, flick right to the Audio tab and click the remote to select it. Flick down and you will hear full dynamic range. Flick left once to get a list of the languages. Flick up and down to hear the list of languages and click the remote on the desired language. And finally, the program now resumes playing. And finally, Prime Video on the Fire TV and Fire TV Stick. If you turned on audio description in the device's settings, when you play content in Prime Video, the audio description will most likely just play. If you want to turn it on or off, do the following. First, double-tap the menu button on the remote. Second, press the down arrow once to go to audio and press select. Next, arrow up and down to view the available audio languages. Fourth, press select to check the box for the language option you want. And finally, press the back button to leave the menu options. And in conclusion, Amazon Prime Video is a full-featured service with apps that are accessible to users with visual impairments. There is an enormous amount of content available on Amazon, with more being added on a regular basis. Amazon is expending resources to harness the latest technologies to bring in a massive amount of high-quality audio description to users with visual impairments. If you already have a subscription to Amazon Prime, then a great deal of this content is now available to you at no additional cost. And that about wraps up this week's edition of the Blindness and Disability News Hour. This program covers the week of October 27th, 2024. My name is Bill. Thanks for joining us. Hopefully I will be back in person doing a real-time program next week. Until then, this program, as always, is a production of Mind's Eye Radio in Belleville, Illinois. See you, bye.